Well, the weekend's over, so it's time to chat about it. Got a midget and a Jew, so why don't you sit down and listen to our dope podcast during lunch, dinner, or breakfast. Brad Williams and Adam Ray are here for you any time of the day. So come on and treat yourself right. It's about last night.
Put those on and adjust that mic. Is
sweet.
You go one on, one off?
Yeah, I'm a one on, one off guy.
Nice.
Yeah.
Do you like the sound of your own voice?
Not that much. That's why I'm a one on, one off guy.
Really?
Yeah.
It's a really easy listening voice. I was listening to you on Michael Kasa's podcast last week, and I was just like, man, KP's got a really... But I've known that for a while, just from knowing you for a while and talking to you. And it's like, I think that does look, if you're having a conversation with somebody, you got to be interesting first and foremost, right?
Yeah.
You have to have most of your teeth
because
that's going to be distracting.
Yep.
You got to, you know, be somewhat presentable. But then also, like, your voice has to be
the calming influence.
Wow. Yeah, right?
Yep.
Thanks, NPR KP.
That's right.
Yeah.
The calming influence with KP.
See? I would listen to that audiobook.
I mean, I'm glad that I'm finding so much. Out about you, because all I knew you was Big Cock. That's all I knew.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, that's usually... It's weird how that continually stays at the top.
Yeah,
when you
and it's like, hey, I've done so much other shit in my career. Stop just talking about my incredibly large
penis. Is that what KP stands for? Catastrophic penis?
It actually stands for Big Cock. It's
weird spelling.
Look up the Romanian.
Yeah, and see, this is why. We like talking to comics. They can yes and.
Yeah.
You guys go, you just go, okay, I'm going to wait for the question.
I like doing podcasts, and I get invited to do so few.
Really?
Yeah, well, because it's like I'm not touring,
right.
So there's not like I'm not like
out of sight, out of mind.
Everyone's mind guy.
Yeah.
But
everybody knows you.
Yeah, but I think if I were in that like all the comics do each other's podcast thing over and over again, I'd go fuck. I have four stories. Like I can tell you.
All right,
I can tell you about a show, and then I can tell you about another show, and then I can say the one thing that Joel McHale's okay with.
So the name of this podcast is Four Stories. By the end of it, we will probably get all four.
Four stories with a calming influence. Yeah.
Wait, but didn't you, I read somewhere that you did Carnegie Hall?
I did, with Joel.
Oh, shit.
That's how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Know someone famous who needs an opener.
Hey, I understand that, because how do you think I played Red Rocks?
Exactly.
I did not sell out Red Rocks, but I opened for someone who did.
That's right. Who'd you open for Red Rocks?
Mencia. He sold out Red Rocks, and he also sold out the Toyota Center where the Rockets play.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's like, I've done those.
Yep. He had probably the most fascinating, massive run of, like, holy shit, Carlos, you are selling out everything.
Yeah, and I was for that whole run. So I had really good timing, because I was there for that run, and then when the shit hit the fan, I was gone.
You're like Pete Carroll.
Yep.
Yeah, when the shit hit the fan at UFC, it's like, oh, no, I just, you know.
Seattle looks nice.
Yeah. I mean, but, it had nothing to do with the sanctions that were going to come down. No,
there
nothing.
There was like a period of time where, at sort of like the height of the Soup's popularity, where Joel was selling out the theaters, and he was selling out big venues, and he still does. He still does great. I mean, you're just with him.
But he was mentioning how he's like, dude, at the height of the Soup, he goes, it was fucking bonkers.
Yeah, and we were, so there was a night we were in Irving, Texas, the Verizon Amphitheater.
Nice. Okay.
Which is just really weird, because he was doing Spy Kids, and that was shot in Austin at Robert Rodriguez's studio, which is this crazy big airplane hangar that's got like a full wall of green screen. So instead of Joel flying home to do the Soup, they just flew us out, and Robert was just like, just pick a corner and fucking do your little show, whatever. and so
I'm rich, I've got stuff that I'm not using.
So we had the Carnegie gig coming up, and Joel hadn't done much stand-up because he'd been doing the movie, and I hadn't done stand-up for a while, and so he was like, I'm gonna book us a night. And I go, okay, cool. And I'm thinking that maybe we'll do like, you know, Velveeta Room in Austin,
Gotham,
or something like that.
Yeah, or something like that.
And so instead, what he books is the amphitheater, the Verizon Amphitheater.
Which I know that theater that holds about 3,000.
Yeah, and it's so weirdly set up because it's really like a pie slice. It's AEG, the same company that did Staples Center. Right. So it's really like just a pie slice of Staples Center minus the court or the ice arena or something. Right. And so we get in, and it was like maybe my only time with that kind of like weird rock star treatment where you like you take a car underneath a building, and then you go up the freight elevator, and you're in a green room. Then you go back up the freight elevator, you're on the stage, go back down, get in the car, and then you fly.
It feels like a true rock star walk up to the stage, right?
So I go up, I do my set. I have a pretty good set, and I get done. And then Joel's coming on, and I decide that I want to see this place because I've only been in the bowels of it. So I had noticed while I was on stage, and like at the time I was a King season ticket holder, so I was at Staples all the time.
Oh, nice.
And I noticed that there was like some sort of weird similarity in the architecture. That the like, why does this comedy club have skyboxes? You know, kind of thing. And I go up outside into the concourse.
Yeah.
And it's literally like a mirror image of the section that I would go out of from my King seats to go get a hot dog or whatever. Like same kind of Pepsi sign here, this, that.
Wow.
And suddenly I'm having a fucking spell. Like I'm like, what's going on?
You're like
just
very,
a dream.
Very Truman Show. Or the one artist that does a staircase that I can't think of the name of it. I'll look it up.
You probably do your thing.
We want to act smart.
Okay. So I freak out, and then I look out the window, and I see, like, the ballpark at Arlington across the way, and I was like, okay, good, I'm in Texas like I thought I was. and so then I go back, I watch a little bit of Joel's show from in the room, I go back down, we get the thing, and this was like, the most fascinating thing with Joel ever, because we had been doing stuff, and when he started doing stand-up, and he started, I was out with him in, like, improvs and in San Francisco and stuff, and we
more shows. MC Escher. I should have known that.
MC Escher, son of a bitch. Yeah.
Okay.
I thought you were calling me MC something, and I was like, that fucking feature, Brad.
MC Escher. MC Escher sounds like the worst Jewish rap name ever.
Yeah.
I'm a MC Escher.
Or the best, depending on, like, what synagogue
you
go to.
You know, we're going to party or not, whatever.
Yeah. It's Shabbat. We'll party on Sunday.
So we get out of this show, and we're going out, and all of a sudden there's like fans waiting behind the fence.
How are Soup fans?
They're pretty cool, but they're all. But it's like ladies of a certain age, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
It wasn't a particularly old age.
Yeah.
But so Joel says to me, we're in the car, and he goes, "Hey, we're going to stop the car. I'm going to sign some autographs." I go, "Cool." And he goes, "Get out with me." And I was like, "No." And he said, "Why?" And I go, "Because like an hour ago, I was on a stage in front of them with a big screen with me, and most of them aren't going to remember me, and the other bunch are going to walk up and say, 'You were pretty good too,' and I don't fucking feel like hearing that right now.
I want to remember what just happened on stage.
Yeah. Yeah, or they'll just think that you hire the worst fucking security of all time if I'm just standing next to you.
Are you his agent?
Yeah. And so he's, get the fuck out of there, let's go. And so we go, and we're standing on this little hill that we're standing on, a little grass hill, and it's playing out exactly like I predicted it would. Some people are walking up going, "Hey, you're pretty good too." Once in a while, somebody, a straggler, come and go, "Can I get an autograph?" And I was like, "I don't bring pens to."
You don't want it.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, this couple walks up. Mm-hmm. And this is being filmed. I looked pretty much like this at that period in time. This couple walks up, and the guy goes, "Hey, man, you are great." And his wife starts like rubbing my arm.
Nice.
And I go, "Oh, thank you very much. And what are you doing now?" I go, "I'll probably go back to the hotel and, you know, have a glass of wine and catch some sleep. Got to get back to L.A. tomorrow." And I go, "Yeah, why don't you come party with us?" I said, "No, thank you very much. That's very nice of you to." And he goes, and she goes, "We really want you to come party with us." And I go, "I really appreciate that, but, you know, I'm going to." And the guy goes, "I'm not sure if you know what we're saying." And right then, I hear Joel go, "Excuse me." And he pulls me aside. And this is why Joel is like the greatest friend of all time and at the same time just the weirdest fucker I know. He pulls me aside and he goes, "Can I talk to you for a second?" We walk up the hill a little bit and he goes, "I just want you to know that you're very funny. You're accomplished. You've done good things. And marriage is a forest, and it takes years to plant all those trees, and all it takes is one match." I go, "Dude, I'm not gonna fuck this guy's wife." And he goes, "Oh, okay, good." And he goes walking back down and just starts signing autographs again.
Ladies and gentlemen, story number one.
He also
probably, you know, had a great forest analogy and saw an opportune time to drop that on his friend.
Exactly. He was just working on that.
He really is a pro marriage dude, and I think because I met his wife briefly at a holiday party, and she seemed like the greatest. Mm-hmm. When we were in Arizona, he met. We were definitely pounding away some drinks on Saturday night. and he met a couple couples afterwards, and one, this guy who had just gotten a girl pregnant, and they were young, and Joel was like, and are you guys married? And this chick was, the guy was definitely batting out of his his zone, you know what I'm saying? And got the girl pregnant, and Joel was like, what the fuck are you doing? He goes, look at this. Look at her. He goes, look at you. And everyone, and his friends are there, and everyone's laughing, and they're also big fans. So everything Joel's saying, they're just like, this is the greatest. Yeah. And Joel's like, you got to lock this up, man. He goes, like, what are you doing? And he's going to the girl. And the girl's like, yeah, I'm fucking waiting. And the guy's like, the guy goes, yeah, man, but like, you know, marriage is like, it's crazy. And Joel goes, shut up. He goes, listen to me. There's a forest. And I was like, okay, I've heard this before. But he was very, you know, it was cool.
Oh, look at that. That worked out so much better.
Yeah.
Oh. Because I realized my glasses were kind of doing that.
Yeah.
I was like, I am on a camera. I should try. I should try to show America why that guy's wife would have wanted to fuck me.
No, I'm good enough to get swingers.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm good. I'm that quality.
Rural Texan swingers.
Listen, I'm
not swinger good.
I'm not good enough to get them by themselves. No. But if they're already attached, then
they've already
I'm in.
Subjugated themselves to some other mediocre looking guy's wants and desires, then I am your man.
when did you and Joel? When did the friendship blossom? But when did you meet? And was it instantaneous?
Pretty close. The soup had been a thing for a few minutes before I showed up. Like I was doing the third season of Last Comic Standing. I was producing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
And and
that season was
the Alonzo Bowden, the season one versus season two.
Right. Nice.
Like I did the very end of the first season. I did the live stuff for the end of the first season. I wrote for Jay. And
I start talking in this voice, does it give you a little PTSD, man?
I mean, you know, pal, what do you think we should do about that? Let's really get into my career now and talk about, like, how do you start? But where does the feeling come from?
KP was undeniable, man. And of course, we are talking about the Great Barry Cats, who I'm literally coming from a lunch with.
Yes.
Oh, are you really?
Yeah, so that's why the voice is in my head.
I love Barry so much.
The best. Two-time guest of his pod.
Yes, more sports. He got me that job. Like, he fought for me that job. Yeah.
Listen, man, I'll never forget you. KP Anderson.
Catastrophic penis.
Whether it be JT Thomas or KP Anderson, you always go for the two-letter abbreviation in the beginning. Give me a bad example. JT Snow, fantastic baseball player. Bad example.
That is one of the best Barry Katzes I have ever heard.
It's undeniable, man.
You know what, my wife, I drive my wife nuts because I will talk dirty to her as Barry Katz.
I'll
do it just out of the blue. We've been married a long time, and we'll just be sitting on the couch, and I'll just be like, I'm going to put my cock inside me tonight. And she's like, I get the fuck away from me.
I love that so much
because
you've been with your wife how long now?
17 years.
17 years. So it's like they always say you got to do stuff to spice it up to keep the marriage young.
The unexpected. Yeah. Barry Katz sex talk.
Nothing is more unexpected than coming to your wife and saying, listen, I'm going to do some dirty things to you tonight. My penis will be undeniable. You won't be able to deny it in whatever hole I desire.
Brett, I did not know that you did this impression that well. It is of all of JJ's, mine, everybody that does, that is the best Barry I've ever heard.
Oh, you're very welcome. I can do a voicemail for you if you need to.
Wait,
I don't know if when you bring back the soup, if there's a Barry Katz character, because Barry's not available. He's very busy.
Little Barry? Yep.
But if you want to do Little Katz, maybe find a woman who's obsessed with cats, and you say, we have Little Katz for you. She gets very excited, and then I walk in a suit going, not what you were expecting?
Holding
Let's
a kitten.
Talk about your expectations as much.
Who's
as
on your Mount Rushmore of kitties?
Garfield.
I mean, you got Garfield. You got Heathcliff.
The cat from Homeward Bound.
If I get into that, I can't get out of it.
I know, it's impossible. I've got the remainder of that cold, so I can't stay in it that long. Otherwise, it'd just be that for an hour. Yeah.
Bill Burr episode dropped with him today on his podcast. And Burr, it's like, I've never heard, it's an amazing episode, obviously, but Burr is just ripping Barry.
Yeah.
And he's loving it. And it's like nobody, and Burr's like, I can't believe no one's, he's like, all the comics I listen to that come on this podcast, nobody's giving you shit about like these things he's giving them shit about.
Yeah.
So I'll let you listen to. But, and he's just loving it. And it's like Burr just really just fucking Anytime I hear, and I want to know for you too, like people coming up, and then I want to get back to Last Comic Standing, but sure. like the people that when you got into the comedy business, you looked at as being like, you know, just so fearless or that were intimidating to you, but you also looked up to, you know, yeah. like when I first started stand-up and I would see like Dane just crushing, I was uh-huh. like, I was like, oh, and I didn't know yet that I needed my own point of view. I would be like, oh, that's what I need to do to be yeah. successful. Yeah. Not knowing that, oh, you're going to have your own path and your own shit. But I was so intimidated by how much he would crush, but then also inspired because I was like, oh, I want to fucking get that good.
Yeah.
Who were those guys for you?
Well, it was interesting because I stepped into it like, so I started in Minneapolis and I moved quickly.
Is that why you look like Al Franken?
A little bit, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I moved quickly through it in Minneapolis. I just, it was the right time that, yeah. and I was really hell bent. I'm sort of a A-type when it comes to like, no, I want to do that now. So I'm going to go do that type nice. Of stuff. I'm
what
very
you need?
Oprah motivated. Yeah. But,
especially
but,
now.
Yeah. Times hey. Have changed. There's a new day coming.
2020. Yeah. That was fucking great. It was unbelievable.
It was so fucking incredible.
She should have held up her soups at the end. That
yeah. Like,
really...
like my daughter, it was interesting watching my daughter sit on the couch watching
How old
it.
How is she?
She's 14.
Oh, okay.
Wow.
And so she's watching it, but it's very interesting because my kid is just very like, she's science and math and she is, and so she's heading into this field and into this arena that's been male dominated for a long mm-hmm. time, but just her like out of the womb mentality has been this sort of like blanket, I don't give a fuck, I'm doing what I'm doing, I don't care. So she hangs out with boys, the boys give her shit, she gives shit back. She's just never been
dope.
Like very, very caught up in the like the unfairness of it all. She just doesn't mm-hmm. give a shit and she'll fight, you know, to just stand out. And so that's her and that's her makeup.
Well, I'm
and
sure that, having a cool comedy yeah. dad it helps. Yeah.
Yeah. And so she literally turns to me after Oprah's speech and looks at me and goes, Dad, what the hell have men been doing? And oh. I was like, oh, so much, honey.
Just like, so, how much time do you
yeah,
have?
Yeah. And I keep trying to explain to her, and I'm like, yeah. I hate it when guys go, you know, it really drives me nuts when something happens. And as the father of a daughter, as a husband of a wife, as a son of a mother,
it's like, yeah, yeah. we all have women yeah. in our lives. We
like,
get
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you don't have to be any of those things to realize that there isn't a fucking hunting season for women. Like, there's no reason to.
Now, listen, if I didn't have a mother, a daughter, or a wife, I would just be grabbing them by the pussy everywhere.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, because yeah, like, that's what you do. But because. Yeah. Yeah.
I know. They told me when I was a kid not to do that.
But because I'm a son of a mother.
Yeah.
I know not to just punch random women in the face.
Yeah. But here's the slippery gray area. Here's the weird thing mm-hmm. is like when if I see some on the news, like when Trump did that grab him by the pussy, when that all came out, I had this talk with my daughter where I was like, I never want to hear that you put up with any shit from anybody like that. You kick them in the balls and you grab their fucking throat and you squeeze until they realize what they did wrong.
Very good.
It was just very like, but I do realize that some levels of sexist behavior, before I give my daughter her empowerment speech, I was probably guilty of in another room with the woman who gave birth to her like 5 minutes earlier. That's just like not anywhere near to that degree, of course, but there's always some sort of like,
yeah.
you know, we are creatures of the environment that we came up. I'm from mid-east central Minnesota.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm
a small town. Our black guy was our gay guy. So it's not like... It's not like I came up with the most open of minds towards
our
every
black
fucking
guy was our game.
Matt Reynolds, he's the greatest guy. He teaches theater in Seattle now.
Oh my God. Does he really?
Yeah.
That's yep. so great. That's our black guy was our gay guy. Yeah. How is that not the title of a sitcom?
He came out to me our senior year. We were driving home from an Eddie Murphy concert.
Yeah.
On like a dark country road. And
I'm sure that concert, maybe Eddie used the F word pretty liberally.
Yeah. He turns to me and goes, and you know, it was not hard to tell with Matt that he was gay, but he hadn't like said it to anybody. We're driving home and he turns to me and goes, you know, I'm gay, right? And I pull the car over and I go, this is where you decided to tell me on the dark country road. And he goes, you're the one who pulled the car over. I'm like, fuck you.
and then that was it.
That's
amazing.
Yeah.
Perfect.
He's the greatest guy. We're friends to this day.
Oh my God.
But you know, it's like that is the thing that I think people get the most freaked out about is like the internal deep dive of like, look, you there's so many things that you can do just live in your life that can be, you know, if nothing else, disregardful of another person in the room.
Absolutely.
And so it's like that when you listen to that Oprah speech, you do realize the sort of like the sort of enormity of like, oh shit, like everybody is going to get called out on their shit for better or worse now.
Yeah.
And that's probably, like, I'm pretty sure that over the years that I've been doing this stuff that I've been a pretty respectful person to everybody that I've worked with, but I'm also pretty sure that I'm every once in a while going to say something and I'm going to deserve to have somebody go, hey, you can't fucking say that.
Yeah.
Okay? You know?
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Well, that's part of our world too. Like you're constantly needing to throw things at the wall to see what sticks, right?
Yeah.
And like we're taking a lot of swings all the time.
Yeah.
And I mean, I don't know with there was a time when like Natasha Leggero made a joke and then I think she didn't apologize for it, but people there's you know, it's just kind of a case by case thing where people are deciding like, oh, do I think this is going to affect my career? Then I'm going to do the right thing. And like even SNL, like firing that girl over that joke because they were like, we've got to cover our ass. It's like, but I don't think, and everyone has an opinion about whether it's right or wrong. But now everything is under such a big microscope. I mean, look how quickly Louis got everything taken away.
Yeah.
And it was like.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, so every guy and I do this kind of joke in my act now. Where like every guy when all this was happening is going through that Rolodex in his head, like, oh shit, like what have I said throughout my entire life? That now has been documented.
Yeah, and it's really like, look, you may think that you've lived a squeaky clean right life because you haven't done something that can be defined by the law.
Sure.
But every man in the room, look me in the eye and tell me you weren't creepy and fucking possessive and called too many times when some chick broke up with you when you were 19, 20, 21, 22 years old.
Especially when you're just finding it out and you're just going through it, like high school? You're not a person yet.
No.
You're not an adult. You don't know. So yeah, you've probably done some things that were, like we said, we're not saying that we went full Harvey on people. We're not saying that at all. But we probably said... things that were not good.
Of course, but I think we all can attest that we know how to read the room. And it's like some people, you know, missed out on having like not having like a dick etiquette course in elementary school. But like a lot of people just assume.
Should be a great course.
It should be. Social studies, math, dick etiquette. But it's like, because there's
step one, don't take it out.
Well, there's some dudes out there that just like don't know how to read the room and they'll be three dates in like at a Cheesecake Factory. There's a break in the conversation and they're like, what do you think of this? And it's like, no, dude, that's not the right time. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Recognize when a penis reveal is appropriate.
Yeah.
And that's my platform when I run with Oprah in 2020.
God, she was so like, I would imagine she sounds presidential when she orders a pizza, but that was fucking like, that was.
She also
like,
did her Oprah yell at one point where she was like, and when the sun rises.
Yeah. I thought it was fascinating how much everybody said without actually mentioning Trump. I think they figured something out there.
Yeah.
That it's like, if we say his name, then he'll engage and he'll drown out the important part of the conversation. Yeah. So
but
if
you
don't
just
say, name,
it was kind of perfect.
If you say when forces are keeping us down, or when you say when other people are telling you that women can't do, when you say Trump has sort of become Voldemort.
Yeah,
like you can't.
Dude,
well, he is a stable genius.
Yeah,
it is crazy how much I because I was home on the couch with a cold. I actually watched the 6 and 7 Harry Potters on Saturday, and that was my biggest thing. Is like, oh my god, they're fucking Death Eaters. This is what they are. He is Voldemort.
Because when you bring up a concept and an idea, then the person cannot respond directly. Because now, and this is what, this was also kind of one of the brilliant things about Oprah's speech, and we'll get back to UKP, but once we get on an Oprah time,
already two stories down, I'm not even going to tell you what.
Once we go Oprah, we don't go back.
But like, is... Like you said, the speech never attacked any one person directly. So if you come out against Oprah's speech, it's like you're saying, nah, we should be able to assault still. That's what it sounds like.
It was tone perfect.
Exactly.
Fantastic.
So you met Oprah on The Soup.
Never met her. No. Her offices were across the way when she started that network. Her offices were across the way. And you could literally kind of tell that it was like, you people at E, please don't bother Oprah. She's doing way more important things.
And you were probably like, we shouldn't bother Oprah.
Yeah.
But you know what, though? She seems, just in the interviews I've seen of her, or like, I don't know, like chummy enough to where like, I bet she watched the show and like, she seems like she had a good sense of humor. Like, I bet if you ran to her in a hall, she wouldn't be above being like, hey, pop in on this thing. She might, right?
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
I want to believe that anyway.
I think that
I wake up in the morning hoping Oprah wants to have fun.
I think that like a few people who are somewhere near that stratosphere, because there's not a lot, there's no one else who's in that stratosphere, but you know, there's people that I've come into contact with who are along the way, and they all have like this hard candy shell of people around them
yeah.
that do not let anybody through to find out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's just like there's not enough hours in the day for her to hug and talk to every fucking yeah. person who comes her way.
No.
So like at E, the, you know, Seacrest, who I've known forever and who's yeah. a really good guy, always had, you know, this coterie of people that kind of just formed a wall and blocked, and you know, he's short, so he's like, hey buddy. And
yeah,
and that's
dope.
And, yeah. and by the way, I totally understand that, because like there's some people where that take your Elon Musks of the world. Mm-hmm. I like when he started dating Amber Heard, I was like, no, you should not be dating Amber Heard. You're Elon Musk. Just lock you in a room
yeah.
and you figure out the fucking world. Yeah, like, because you can. Yeah.
She could easily distract you through some shit that we all need.
Yes. Yeah. Like, I want that fucking one, a 20-minute tunnel from here yeah. to San Francisco and Vegas, and you're, I want the Hyperloop.
Fuck
and
that.
You're working on it. Yeah. So get that shit done.
Unless you can invent
done.
An Amber Heard for each and every one. Let's get working
you
on your fucking Hyperloop.
Bastard. Yeah. Yeah.
This is
yeah.
the Tesla Amber Heard. Yeah. You're like, oh, okay. Well, now I get what you were doing. Yeah. You were doing market research.
Wait, so on Last Comic, you were writing and EPing
writing,
on it?
No, I was writing and producing the first season. At the very end, second season, which was, you know, Alonzo and John Heffron
yep.
and Kathleen Madigan and that crew.
Yeah.
That was...
you hugged us a little
Heffron
bit more.
Won, oh, sorry, yeah.
yeah. There you go.
Heffron won that one. That was the season that I came on, I think. Was I supervising producer then? I think I was supervising producer at that level. And then the season three, which was the sort of half-configured... Basically what happened was NBC had something else that they had ready to go, and then it wasn't ready. And so they asked us to hustle back and do season one versus season two in live American Idol-style competition.
Wow.
And what nobody really counted on, including Jay, Peter Engel, myself, anybody who was involved in it,
yeah.
was that nobody really remembered season one, because season one was good... mm-hmm. but it wasn't insanely highly rated. It was just
right.
it was just well rated.
Yeah.
Season two was really well rated, but they were out of material.
Yeah.
So season two, because they'd just gotten done with this process and cashed everything that was, you know, network primetime ready. So season two was kind of out of material, but they kept winning all the season versus season challenges just
right.
because everybody liked them and knew them
yeah,
more.
Yep.
Yeah, and season one, you know, Ralphie still wouldn't fucking talk to Dat, and there was all that kind of stuff that was going
yeah.
on. That was
can you blame him?
No, although Dat's a nice guy. Like Dat
nice
is
guy.
A very very nice guy. But that was one of those things that I think people, for anybody that still cares about that stuff, people that put that show together. Did not realize that the audience that was watching was not, that first year especially, was not gauging comedic performance. They were
right.
following the reality show.
Yeah.
yeah.
And so they attached to the lives and the comings and goings, and Dat played really great as TV.
Sure.
So that's, I think, why Dat got those votes. And I do remember when, and Ralphie, you know, was a great friend and had a lot to do with, you know, with my career and helping me through stuff. And I do remember being in the office. I was like the first person to get the envelope when the vote came in.
Mm-hmm.
And I literally opened it up, looked at it, and went, well, this makes 9/11 a little easier to swallow. And just kind of like,
and just that kind of, fan is the 9/11 of reality
yeah,
competition
like,
shows.
I was just like, this is going to be fucking hell when this announcement comes down.
Oh, God. Yeah. Do you remember being in the room for that?
Oh, yeah. I was, Jay was on stage, and he had an IFB, an earpiece in, and I was like counting down because it was live.
Yeah.
And Jay, I don't know if I still have talked to him about it a billion times, and he still won't really tell me, but... he did not, I think, want to reveal the results until the very last second.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
So I was the one going 10, 9, you should probably say who won. 8, 7, say it, fucker. 6, 5, I will fucking kill you if we go to credits and you didn't announce. And the yeah. 4, 3, the winner is Dat Fan. And like you could see the confetti pop, and then NBC just went to the next thing.
Wow.
And yeah, and it was just like, and
no,
and it was
time
just,
to process.
Yeah, and it was
yeah.
just, and Ralphie was so fucking mad. And you guys knew Ralphie when yeah. he was mad.
Yep.
It was hard to get Ralph off that thing for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a rough night. I can only imagine.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Was it a fun experience though? I mean, just being,
I'm really,
was it too much reality and not enough stand up?
I had so little to do with the first season. I literally was, once the show got to Vegas
yeah.
and it was the final performance, so that's when I came into it. Mm-hmm. I'd been doing the Wayne Brady show up until then, and then I
got, oh, nice.
And then I ended that, and they ended that for me. More politely spoken.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know if that was your call, KP.
Yeah, it was not. was not. Turns out I wasn't a daytime guy.
Yeah. Have you met a more talented dude than Wayne Brady?
Yes. Yeah. So
I love that you don't go for the loaded question. Yeah. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, I have. So I moved into that. Moved into that pretty late. Yeah it was a daytime show. I moved into that season. The second season was really fun for a billion reasons, and a lot of it was that group was really, God, this is kind of where, Jesus, I don't even remember what the first question was, but it had something to do with the comics that I, this was where the comics
came
that
back
I,
to
my
it.
Class kind of came in. Like, great. Alonzo and I think Hef was also new faces in 98 in Montreal. Oh, wow. You know, Kathleen and I had been working together forever. There were a lot of people in that who I was really, truly contemporaries with.
Yeah.
And so that was fun because I got to work with them. What was tough about it is that reality show part of it, where they're following people. I was always intentionally kept on the comedy side. I was always kept on what are Jay's jokes going to be, what are how are these head to heads going to go,
yeah,
stuff like that. And I didn't have anything to do with the edits of how the personal interaction stuff. And I wanted it that way. And Jane and Dan, the showrunners, wanted it that way because I had favorites. You know, it was like,
sure.
So it was tough watching them react to the stuff that went on during that season that got aired. And I do remember there was one night where nobody was doing anything inside the house, and I was like, all right, I'll get them to do something. I put all their names in a hat, and I rang the doorbell, and Alonzo answered, and I handed him the hat, and he goes, what's this? And I go, you're going to play a game because you're boring us. And he goes, what's the game? I said, you're going to pull a name out of the hat, and then you're going to play Here's What's Wrong With Your Act, and whoever pulls the name has to tell the other person what's wrong with their act. And he just goes, go fuck yourself, KP. Threw the hat at me and shut the door.
I mean, you know what? Good for Alonzo.
Yeah, right?
That's a loaded question.
Oh, God, it would have ended in bloodshed.
I don't know how much the comedians really anticipated the reality portion of it to be as prominent as it was, right?
And it's just tough. Like, if you haven't done one of those shows, and I've produced one, but I've never been a part of one, I don't know how fast you just fall into that fucking mindset of, like, I got to make an allegiance, and I got to plot against this person,
right,
and I got to do this, and I got to do that. And well, if we whisper in the bathroom, the camera and the microphone in the bathroom won't catch it. Yes, it will. and so the producers are there and collecting that shit, and it makes the most compelling TV.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then people who really wanted to advance their performance careers via that, some of them did, some of them didn't. The people who didn't and played the game and got into the, you know, into the weeds,
yeah,
and whispering about each other, they don't like that they did that show. And I don't blame them. And at the same time, it's like, well, you got to be a little eyes wide open about these things when you go into it.
Yeah.
But ultimately, yeah, I would have been pissed about the same thing. And I can't honestly say that I wouldn't have been one of those people in the bathroom whispering.
Yeah,
sure. So, I mean, yeah, it's like people that come off The Bachelor going, like, they showed me in a negative light. It's like, it's the fucking, yeah, Bachelor.
Yeah, and it's, like, kind of perfectly set up for, like,
yeah,
well,
expect?
Like, yeah, the big money comes if you make it to the last stage, and the way to make it to the last stage is to play the game.
And be on the show.
Yeah, and your ability to do stand-up doesn't really count until America's voting. So,
yeah, you just kind of go. Yeah. And then, so you're on Last Comic Standing, and then is The Soup the next project?
Yeah, so I left. So Last Comic ended, the season three ended, and I got called by Ted Harbert, the guy who was running E! At the time, and I'd done a pilot script with him when he was in an independent production thing, and he said, I got this guy, we've got this show that nobody's really watching, but the guy's mega talented, he's a great guy, but he's kind of a pain in the ass, he keeps coming into my office like I'm not the president of the network, and he goes, come in, I might cancel it in 10 weeks, but if you keep him out of my office and we still like each other, I'll give you your next job. I was like, okay, cool. So I went
That's
in and I met
pitch.
Joel. Yeah. And Joel was sitting in his office and like there were three or four people interviewing for the job, taking over as a head writer. And I was the only one who actually watched the tapes they sent over of the show. So I had something to say about it.
Yeah.
So Joel
That's
was
so
just
crazy
like, yeah. So Joel's like, I don't know why they don't just fucking hire you. You're the only one to watch the show. And I was like, well, tell them that. And
yeah.
So that's how I got the job. And then 11 years later,
11
because
years.
Because you, yeah. I mean, granted, you are talented and you are good at your job, but you watch the tapes.
Yeah.
That seems so logical and yet so insane that
anyone would interview for a job and then not be familiar with the product.
I think it's and I see it all the time. I mean, I think that there's a lot of stand-ups who their this is a weird way to get into that answer, but there's a lot of stand-ups who their mindset mm-hmm. is, well, if this doesn't work out, I can always go be one of those writers on one of those shows. And what they right. don't account for is the fact that people who weren't stand-ups who are just writers on those shows only in their lives wanted to be a writer on a television show.
Yeah.
And so when they get into the room with them, they're being outclassed by just a work ethic. Just an ability, the same way that they, the same way that stand-ups will grind open mics over and over and over again on any given night. These people sit at home and just fucking write, and they build that muscle. And so a lot of stand-ups who could easily have the talent to do it, mm-hmm. but they just get hit in the face with the workload and don't know what to do with it.
Yep.
And it's just, it's sort of like an unwillingness to sort of like see beyond your own talent and realize that it's a competitive field and you have to have preparation if you want to succeed.
Yeah. Jay Moore told me the Bobby Knight quote, which is, I don't want, Bobby Knight once said, I don't want players with the talent to win. I want players that are willing to prepare to win.
Exactly.
And then he hit a kid with a chair.
Yep.
But
yep.
that's
yep.
not.
Yeah. But he had prepared.
Yeah, yeah. He had prepared to hit the kid with the chair. Yeah. The kid did not prepare to duck. So.
By the way, that's how he knew he would not yeah. have that kid on his team. Yeah. You got to prepare to duck.
Yeah. yeah.
You yep. know I'm Bobby Knight. I'm going to throw something at
yeah.
you.
Yeah, yeah exactly.
And do your homework.
Yeah, to answer a much earlier question.
Yeah, yeah.
The who were the comics yeah. who you know who mm-hmm. inspired, terrified me a little bit. It was really that. Like when I got here, the era that I wound up in LA in was because the Minneapolis thing was there were great comics in Minneapolis and a lot of them you know
was Swartzen there.
Swartzen was I was the headliner Swartzen's first night up.
Wow. Yeah.
And Nick was
you could tell right
yeah,
away.
Yeah, Nick was great, but he was after my time in Minneapolis for most purposes.
You there for the Louis Anderson years?
No, I was after Louis.
Okay.
And but like Hedberg was from there, and Mitch okay. and I, Mitch and Stanhope and I were really good friends.
Were you there for the Chuck Knoblauch years?
Yes, I was.
Great.
I was there for the Chuck Knoblauch.
Not the baseball Chuck Knoblauch. Yeah. The stand-up comedian Chuck Knoblauch.
No, did he really do stand-up? No. No. I was like, what? I missed that.
He hated baseball. He just wanted to do stand-up on the yeah. side. Chuck Knoblauch was, yeah.
So you were hanging out with Mitch.
Yeah, Chuck was a friend in yeah. Minneapolis. Oh, and wow. he would come to the club, and one night he brought Christian Laettner. And he was like, because the athletes would all hang out together
Dude.
In Minneapolis. And he said to me, he goes, I'm bringing Christian Laettner tonight. By the way, he's kind of a dick. And I was like, oh, okay. And he showed up with Christian Laettner, and you know what? He was kind of a dick.
But like, did you love him?
I was like,
that 30 for 30, I was like, dude, I get it, man.
Yeah, he was the great white enemy.
Yeah, he was, yeah. And he was great at being it. And he was just kind of like not really a dick, just kind of a dick.
Yeah.
Like you get off stage, you had a good set, and he'd give you some shit about something that happened, sure. and you'd be like, you're kind of a dick.
Yeah,
like I don't hate you, but
yeah, well, you could have just said nice job.
Yeah,
and fucked with me about the minute that went wrong.
Wait, that to me is so cool that like the. That you were doing enough shit like that the athletes were like coming around and because that's all I want is to be friends with the athletes I grew up
with. In Minneapolis, it's really weird because in season, a lot of people wind up staying. Like a lot of people wind up loving the you know the lifestyle up there, and so they live
Prince.
There in the summer. Yeah,
Prince had all the money in the world. You can go anywhere.
Yeah.
Just stay in Minnesota.
Yeah. So a lot of people wound up staying. So yeah. so and with the athletes, like it was in that really good run of the Twins, like 87 and 91. And for whatever reason, they all just like come into the Comedy Gallery. So a lot of the comics who hung out there hung out with a lot of the ballplayers.
Wow.
And yeah, it was just very fun.
It works out.
Yeah. When you're at the Subban, you watch the tapes, mm-hmm. which by the way, again, like let's not skip over like the importance of like doing what's required for the job. Like I feel like the only job where you can be truly uninformed is if you're one of those ladies on one of those late night infomercials for some cooking products where it's like okay. the macaroni only took 15 minutes okay. because of your fucking, you know.
Yeah. Where your job is to be surprised.
Yes.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Cornbread in an hour. Shut the fuck up, Greg. Yeah. You know.
Are you kidding me? If you vacuum all the air out of that, your blanket will get flatter. You fucking knock me over with a fucking feather. What's the phone number?
although I would love to have sex with one of those women. Just because.
Oh, I'm going to marry one of those
so
women.
So surprised.
I'm going to marry one of those
Are you telling me when I take off my bra, that thing gets erect and 4 inches bigger? Wow!
Four inches bigger.
Yeah.
So generous.
If I'm lucky.
Yeah.
Also, they're so easily amused. Like, that's who you want as a wife. Like,
yeah.
Just very easily entertained. Like,
yeah.
Are you telling
yeah.
me?
Yeah. So can I answer the question about who intimidated me?
Yes, shit? Please.
The people that inspired me and intimidated me. And by the way, to this day, still do.
Yes.
were the ones who you could look at them and you knew that they were on the track. Like when I got to mm-hmm. LA, Attell was out here. Oh, Rogan wow. was just starting to catch heat. Sarah Silverman was and then on the more alternative side, like Patton Oswalt and Blaine Kopach.
Holy
and, you know,
shit.
Like this amazing. The alternative thing always,
by the
always
way,
amused
Blaine,
me.
Blaine Kopach loves you.
He's the funniest that fucking man that ever
that,
lived.
That you just threw his name into that.
Blaine is the funniest. Blaine, I think, is the funniest name I know mentioned Blaine. On a minute by minute. I can't say pound for pound because he has negative weight.
He has manorexia.
Yeah, but he is so fucking funny, and I love working with Blaine. But what I always found interesting about that alternative scene mm-hmm. was that it was absolutely the people who were set to be stars that were going to shoot out and have careers forever, and people who had no fucking business doing it whatsoever, and they were gathered in the same place, mm-hmm. and it was just this fine little line of like, Greg Barrett knows how to tell a punchline.
Yep.
Comic X has not heard of it. He actually thinks that just like nasally whining about the audition he had today is enough.
Right.
And it's just that little like just that little fine-tuny thing.
Especially in the alternative scene, man.
Yeah. And I never got it. I never understood why it's like, oh my God, just by virtue of like moody clothes, you have access to the greatest fucking talent in the world. Learn from them. Yeah. Like just get a little bit more aggressive in your wordsmithing and you'll find it. And they wouldn't do it. They would just go, no, we're all man. And like, it's almost like
in some of the alt scene. Yes, you do have your people that and the names that you just mentioned, mm-hmm. but you also I think you have some people that literally when they get laughs, they think like, well, that's not what I'm supposed to do.
Yeah,
that's not the alt scene.
Yeah, exactly.
I need to get people to think.
Yeah, and then there's other people who are just like too brilliant for the craft. There's people who
Charles Fleischer's.
Yeah, who will drive themselves mad by getting laughs by like where they'll kill. And just need to throw out the entire act because apparently it was good enough for these people.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And you come across those and you go, oh, you sad bastard! You're gonna wind up substitute teaching, aren't you?
shout out to Miss Pastrang, my favorite substitute teacher from Kellogg Middle School. And she had also, a lazy eye, but a motivated work ethic,
and also a hell of an open micer.
Yeah,
Miss Pastrang.
Yeah, that's why. She was way too alternative.
Yeah.
Way too alternative. Yeah.
Wait, so what brought you to LA from Minnesota?
the
chutzpah?
Like, a little bit of that. And also, very, very truly, the North Stars moved to Dallas. And I was literally just like, well, fuck it, Gretzky's playing in LA, I guess I'll go there.
Yeah,
and it was absolutely the difference between New York or LA, because like from a career standpoint, I felt like, okay, I can keep doing these, you know, Midwest one night road rooms and make, I guess, some kind of a living, and that'll be fine. But I should really try. There was also, I got really lucky, the Comedy Gallery in St. Paul, which was a big like Death Star of a comedy club, way ahead of its time for any kind of a comedy boom. They had to bring in Louis Anderson, they had to bring in Bill Hicks, they had to bring in Rich Jenny, all these amazing headliners were coming through, Bill Maher, people like that, and I was the house MC there when big names were in town.
Yeah.
And so those guys would talk to me about my writing, and I think Maher was the first one to kind of like sit me down and go like, you're a good enough comic, but your writing is doing something else. Like, you keep hammering away at a premise. And then Robert Schimmel came through, and he and I started working together a lot, and Robert really taught me how to take one subject and beat the shit out of it for jokes.
Wow.
But the writing started to take precedent to the performing at some point, and that was long after I moved to LA, but like, because those guys came through and appreciated the writing, that was the thing that I was proud of, and that was the thing that I got cocky about, and so that I just sort of gravitated into it.
That's huge that they would, I mean, you're a very personable person, so I'm assuming that you were going out of your way to chum it up with them if you're spending a weekend with them, right?
I tried not to be a dick. I tried to be like,
but you also don't want to come off too fanny and too like, hey, have you got any advice, right? Because let them organically bring it up, right?
Like, you try not to be Christian later.
Like Hicks, I became friends with, but I would still like every time he walked in the room, I'd shit myself just because it's like, this fucking guy is the greatest thing that I've, you know. And so I don't think I avoided fanning it up with him too much, but I think that the part of him kind of liked it too.
I was gonna say
because we all have egos and we're in this business because we like to make strangers laugh and we're looking for that validation. Yeah. So. Yeah, if you just fanboy it up a little bit, not a lot, I'm sure it goes a long way.
Dude, when I met Sinbad, which is the name of a one-act play I want to put on at the Hudson Theater someday.
That's awesome.
Where it's just people giving personal accounts of when they met Sinbad.
Yeah.
but he, again, same thing, where we started chumming it up, and then when I was asking him questions, I could tell that nobody in my position, like some young comic, was asking him about so detailed about certain experiences. So he was like telling them almost for the first time, because like, oh shit, I've never really, the people in my life don't ask me about this stuff.
Yeah.
So I think there is a little bit of that.
Yeah, and I think that there's also like this level of you know, there's the comics that the comics have identified as brilliant. There's the there's the people who we anoint and go, oh my God. I think that there's a lot of, like, Sinbad's a good example, Tim Allen's a good example.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who, for whatever reason, because of how they crafted what they did, comics internally tend to like look down their nose at a little bit, just sure. because it's not ripped from the guts of every bad thing that ever happened to
right.
them. And I think that one of the things that I was able to do inside of that run of time also was, like, even though I was trying way too hard to be Bill Hicks at the time, I was still paying attention to these other guys, right. and I was asking them a lot of questions too. And so they would be very forthcoming, especially about the career stuff and what you're going to go through and what it's like. And they were the ones who were getting TV shows at the time. So they'd sit down and talk to you about, like, look, if you really want to get out of this thing and start doing the other thing, you know, here's what happens. And they knew because they'd been through it. And so it was a really good time to be from there.
Wow. Yeah, you just got all that advice coming in from all, and but yeah. then good for you for actually listening to it.
Yeah,
I'm sure there was some shitty advice though, right? You're not taking everything.
Yeah, no, yeah. there was a lot of, you know, the things that always drove me nuts were, you know, headliners who would complain about, you know, if you were too dirty in front of them,
yes,
and stuff like that. And
that's,
it's like
that's a pet peeve of mine, of when I hear stories of like, wait, so and so told you can't tell your jokes,
yeah.
because they're good.
Yep,
because they're killing.
Yeah,
yeah.
Who gives a shit? There was this amazing road comic out of Chicago originally, but he's kind of from all over the place, named Jimmy Wiggins, who passed away a couple years ago. Mm. And Jimmy was one of the first guys I did road stuff with, and I had to drive him up to Duluth from Minneapolis. And Jimmy was just notorious pot smoker, and my car broke down on the way to Duluth, and I was freaking out because we were going to miss the show, we're going to be late. And Jimmy was like, "Young man, number one rule of comedy: they won't start without us." And
wow.
handed me the pipe, and he was like, "Let's just wait for the truck. This is going to be a good time." And he was the first guy to turn to me, and when I said, "How much time you want me to do?" He would go, "It's your stage while you're up there. If I can't follow you, that's on me." And I would just
be like, that is perfect.
And I can't even say that I'm that, you know, that in the time, in, you know, my time spent as a headliner, mm-hmm. that I was that gracious. I would go, yeah, do an extra five. What do I give a fuck?
Yeah.
Like, six. I'd be like, what the fuck?
Yeah. You said five, motherfucker.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
I've done some shows with you, Flappers, with Jay Moore. And I mean, you're so funny. Like, when I'm watching, I'm like, I feel like too, that you want to be doing it more, but it's also your bread and butter and your time is best being spent developing and creating shows, right?
A little bit of that. The larger thing for me is that when I go out and do stand-up, like when that run that I did at Flappers for a couple of months where I was popping in, I felt like I had something new to say.
Yeah.
That's a huge thing.
Which is great I mean, that's the main reason to get up, right, is to know that you have an outlet immediately.
Yeah, and when you do like 10 years on a show, you're writing to this other voice and you're not thinking about how your life is changing. You're not doing stuff. So if I'd go out and do stand up, there was a big chunk of time where I'd be like, I'm a guy, you know, at the time, 38, 39, 40, doing an act that belongs to a 28, 29 year old guy. And my life is so vastly different from this. I don't know. Like, I'm not mad at any of my ex-girlfriends. Why do I keep saying this shit? You know, like what, like that stuff. So I took a break there until I could pop together a five that might lead to more.
Yeah.
Then I did a little bit more, and then kind of the same thing. You get busy with other stuff. And this time through, I think one of the biggest things for me is that, like, when you're in the commerce of TV production and media production, you're constantly in a, it's a give and take. You are engaged in real, like, these people are paying for this thing to get made, so they therefore have a right to say something about how it's presented.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go do stand up, you're writer, performer, director, producer.
Yeah.
It's all you, it's all yours, and you go up, you get the immediate reaction, you get to be happy with it or pissed off about it, and you leave. And I love that. That part I really, really love. You know, my daughter's 14 now, so I there's not so much, you know, dad, why aren't you here type of stuff.
Sure.
But there's still a level of like, I do like my home life, and stand up works in direct opposition to primetime television.
Right. Cause it's like, what are you going to, like, while you're doing all these shows and while you're going to be writing on The Soup, which is coming back to Netflix.
Joel McHale show with Joel McHale. coming to Netflix February 18th.
So it's not The Soup.
It's not The Soup.
But what's the premise of the show?
The premise of the show is it's a weekly recap of all the crazy things that happen in pop culture via clips and stories. But it's going to be global. It's going to be from all over the world on Iwi. We're very much about Kardashians and this and that. We're going to be covering sports. We're going to be covering a kind of politics.
Japanese game shows, fingers crossed.
Oh, yeah. Slippery Stairs.
Yeah,
Slippery Stairs, baby. Yeah, we might just show Slippery Stairs and then have Joel tell one joke at the end of the 18 minutes. Yeah,
that's done.
Wait, real quick before we continue on this path, I want to know, did your when you were doing trying to write stand up when you were like working on The Soup, did it ever, did you ever like get so colluded with like Kardashian stuff to where you were like, I don't even like, you would write, you'd go on stage and be like, man, it's been really rough, my sister's dating this rapper, they're gonna name their kid after a compass, my dad's thinking about becoming a woman.
It,
like,
it was very interesting to me that that my stand-up voice has never really had much to do with popular culture.
Yeah.
Like, the one thing that I do, that I did always appreciate, like, when Joel and I have gone out and done stand-up together, the reception from the audience has been incredibly warm, and they've really seemed to like what I was doing.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, whatever part of my comedic voice or whatever permeates through The Soup, and this new show that we're doing, the Joel McHale Show, hopefully, is... it's noticeable inside of it because they clearly like find a familiarity and immediately as soon as when an MC, this is the thing that drives me fucking crazy when I go out with Joel, is like an MC who doesn't really understand how to do an intro. So they'd go,
I fucking hate that.
So they'd go up and they go, hey everybody, who's a fan of The Soup? People go, and you go, and not knowing that there's an opening act, and they go, this guy is the head writer. Please welcome. Fuck you. Fuck you for that. Don't die.
You don't. For the, but wait. Yeah. Like, okay. You don't. Fuck. It drives me nuts when even comedy clubs go out there and be like, oh, your headliner tonight, give it up for Brad Williams. And then the place claps a lot and they go, but now please welcome KB. Like, please welcome this person that you don't know. And they're like, oh, but I thought, because.
Yeah.
People think that everyone's familiar with the process of there's going to be a host and a feature. No, they don't. Yep.
Welcome to Knuckleheads. Brad Williams is here tonight. Just 45 minutes from now.
I wish they would do that.
Yeah,
exactly. And say, hey, we got a couple of great opening acts for you.
Yeah.
You know, just so they, just so people know. And I can't imagine when they're going to see the guy who hosts The Soup. That's why they bought the ticket.
Yeah, so the
who likes The Soup?
Hey, who likes Wolfgang Puck? Yeah. Want to meet the chef?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. One of my favorite things, we did the Wiltern Theater in L.A.
Oh, nice.
And Dominic DeLeo, who played Mankini on The Soup, was a writer on the show, and he'll be writing with us on the new show. He went out and did time between Joel and I. He's never done stand-up, and he was just shit-faced. So he literally went out, sat down on the stage with the bikini top on, and he just goes, how funny was K.P. Anderson? And the crowd starts clapping. He goes, no, it's a serious question. How funny was K.P. Anderson?
That's talent, man.
Yep.
Are you? How much will you change as far as your approach to writing and just day-to-day on The Soup with versus now the Joel McHale Show?
I think it's going to be interesting as we build this out. Like, because it's Netflix, and Netflix is very global, and because we really, that's why we wanted to kind of, Paul Feig, whom you are very familiar with, Adam, is the guy who kind of, he lives around the corner from, we bumped into each other, he'd been a guest on The Soup a billion times, and he was the one who kind of like,
you said, were telling me that you didn't know how big of a fan he was,
he literally, when he first did the show, I walked in to introduce myself, and I'm KP Anderson, he goes, I know exactly who you are, you're the voice of Simon Cowell's chest hair. And I was like, Jesus Christ.
That's unbelievable.
That's a hell of a credit.
Yeah, like he knows every episode of the show back to back. Like he can tell you everybody who ever worked on it, what parts they played, what they did. And so he was the one who...
That's why he's a mastermind.
Yeah, we were literally out walking in the street, bumped into each other, and he was like, I keep wanting to bring it back. And Joel and I had a talk about it like 2 months prior, and I was like, well, fuck it, let's go upstairs and, you know, have a talk, call Joel and see what he says. And so we did. And Joel's like, yeah, sure. I don't care about it. Is there money? And so we took it out. We put together sort of like, all right, what do we want to do that's the same? How do we want to? We don't want to get out ahead of ourselves. Like, we don't want to do, like, suddenly we're in a big theater and now it's, you know, every night's a comedy rock concert. We want to keep that same kind of stupid
people
small
want to
feel.
Have it feel and, familiar, right?
Yeah. And that's one of the things I loved about it. I loved hearing the crew laugh. Yeah. I loved hearing the voices in the background yelling things.
Yeah, the intimacy was really and the I don't want to say low budget, but the feel of
low budgetness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
Not cable access, but like I don't know. It was raw. Yeah. It was raw, but it was pro, him being in a suit. It was it was perfect.
Yeah, and we're trying. That's where we're at our best. We're trying to re-embrace that, and Netflix has been really cool about understanding that part of it, where we're gonna, you know, we're gonna use a green screen backdrop with a little bit more of a set around it. We're gonna do stuff. The biggest thing that we really actually did talk about, like, should we come back? Should we do this? Is there something new to say? Not that the soup ever said much, but is there some? The landscape has very much changed, and it started changing long before we ever left the air. Like the reality TV, the network reality TV, and cable shit show reality shows. That's not really a huge part of the dialogue, the pop culture dialogue anymore.
Right. Sure.
So we're gonna showcase it, but we're gonna find it from other places, and it's not gonna be Tosh. We're not gonna be just a show of web clips and fails. Mm-hmm. Not to take anything away from Tosh, I didn't mean just Daniel. Fuck you.
Yeah.
We're really going global to try to find I think that the opportunity that exists, that between when we shoot it and when they translate it into 24 different languages, to find an audience out there who might really attach, I think, is the better we reflect what's going on in other cultures. And I think that I hope that the American audience will kind of come along for that part of the ride too, and go, yeah, this is fucking cool. We're sick of hearing about ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. Like what sort of global pieces of are you talking about, like an Italian like soap that you would rip on, or just
if we find it and it's funny? I mean, the biggest thing in pre-production now is we're bringing back a few people from the soup staff who are really good at finding clips. We're bringing in a lot of newer, younger people who are more attuned to like how this shit shows up. You know, and that's not, I'm not a young man anymore. I'm not firewired into, see, I'm even using firewire as a fucking reference inside the thing.
So would you be looking like,
are you still looking to get people to find clips and stuff?
Yeah. Yeah. We're in the process. We're getting close. Yeah.
Would like Instagram people, would you guys make fun of them?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, if they do something that's worth making fun of.
So like when Jake Paul makes a video of himself going,
I hate that fucking guy so much.
Logan Paul.
Anyone with a last name Paul. Yeah. Whatever. Chris Paul. Don't give a shit.
I mean, I usually up until Logan Paul, I was like, didn't have a huge problem with
YouTubers.
Yeah, and just two first name people like that.
Yeah. It's so like when he does the video of him running through Japan and being incredibly offensive and making everyone hate America even more.
Yeah, you guys would shit on that for sure, I bet, right?
Yeah. And one of the things that I actually, Joel and I have been talking about a little bit, and who knows if we'll actually wind up doing it. Sorry, my cough is coming back.
Me too.
But one of the things that we've been talking about is
dwarfs don't cough. It's a stereotype.
I'm sorry.
Really? Yeah, we just...
Is that the part that's missing?
Well, the gummy bears. Yeah. Gummy bears are kind of his immunity.
Yeah, so like it prevents me from growing, but also I don't cough.
You don't cough.
Yeah, and also no STDs ever. No dwarf has ever had an STD.
You and I are doing some shit.
I'm going to give you something.
Raw dog.
If there's no chance, my wife will find out.
You did say it like a challenge, Brad. I've never gotten anything.
Never gotten
Bring it.
What you got?
One of the things that we've been dancing around this idea is just like, I kind of want to do it. You never want to do a show where you're admitting your age to an audience that you want to feel that you're hip.
Yep.
But I do kind of want to do a thing that's just like, it's not my age. The Paul brothers are fucking douchebags.
Yeah.
And just like lay it all, like, it doesn't matter how old you are. You should want to punch these motherfuckers every time you see them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
They really do just embody like, I mean, it's kind of universal. Like a 6-year-old or a 12-year-old should be able to see how douchey they are.
Yeah.
And that's a great thing for a 6-year-old and a 12-year-old to come together over such a piece of shit and be like, I recognize that this guy sucks.
Yeah.
I would not pick him for my team at recess. And, the old man's like, I would not invite him over to my house to play chess.
Yeah. It's not like they veer from polite discourse for comedic reasons. They're just dicks.
Yeah.
They're just,
and that's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have a problem with the whole, I mean, because, I mean, I don't know if what you, just seeing people like that come up through a YouTube stardom, like, what is your...
No, I think that there's a lot of insane talent. And look, if, you know, all of our roads may have been different had we had that kind of access as to how we would have, you know, how our careers would have unfolded. Because it's just the performer spark. It's just like, hey, here's an opportunity for me to make something. This camera that I'm looking at is microscopic. If that had been the way that we broke into this thing, then how we would have gone about doing it. Maybe none of us would have been stand-ups. Maybe we would have been something else to get that to get that first road in.
Yeah,
and so I don't resent that at all. I do think that the biggest thing, like from moving from there into now we're going to do 22 minutes of TV, now we're going to make a real movie, now we're going to do this kind of stuff. The thing that I've come against in my production company, as we've developed people who have come along the way, like we were in development with something with Grace Helbig and Mamrie Hart.
Yeah.
Freaking brilliant and really, really, really truly entertainers and understand who they are and what they want to do. Like that's a perfect example. The show ultimately didn't come together, but it had nothing to do with their ability to understand how to expand beyond what they do.
Right.
It's just sometimes these things happen. There's others that we've been in meetings and development with, and you start talking about like, okay, well, how do we take this thing that's, you know, 30 seconds to 3 minutes long, and all of a sudden every episode of it, and the only reason that we're having this conversation with you is because millions of people have already watched it.
Right.
They become very attendant to their fan base. It's not an ego-driven thing. It's really commerce. It's really, they know that they're making X amount of money by just continuing to do what they do, and it's a lot. It's a lot from where they come from. It's a lot from if they were born with, you know, silver spoon in their mouth. And they become very attendant to their fan base, and you have to do something to expand beyond what works with the fan base.
Right.
But they're so hyper aware because every time they do try to expand, the comments section fucking crucifies them.
Yeah.
So you find yourselves kind of stuck at an unintentional loggerhead of I don't know how to make a show that expands beyond your thing and can fit this time requirement without you being willing to open up the creative past what it is that you do repeatedly that everybody really likes.
It's
tough.
Yeah, it's funny. After the what is his name?
Logan Paul.
Okay. Yeah, I don't give a shit. After that whole thing, Bert Kreischer had a great tweet where he was just like, this is the only time where I've ever wished there was a network executive.
Yeah.
Like one person in the room. Yeah. Just one person in the room just look at him and go, yeah, don't show a dead guy.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
And don't publish it.
Yeah.
It's not good. Don't go into the suicide forest.
Yeah.
You idiot.
Bert's brilliant.
Yeah.
In his own weird way, Bert is one of the more brilliant people I've ever met.
Now, Joel was telling me in Arizona that it's weekly, mm-hmm. right? Once a week,
yep,
the show?
Once a week.
And, I mean, when you start shooting, you're not stockpiling. You're going to go in kind of real time, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll shoot on, I think, Thursdays right now. And the shows will stream between Saturday and Sunday at midnight.
Dope.
Yeah.
Are you pumped?
I'm very excited. It's really cool. It's, you know, since the old show ended, we've done a lot. We've made a lot of pilots. We did the Hidden Camera series, the Kevin Hart Lift Legend series.
Yo, the Correspondence Dinner?
The Correspondence Dinner was during the soup.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
so that's when Joel hosted.
Yeah.
And you wrote for that.
Yes.
Yeah, that's crazy to me.
That was fun.
Right.
Was
is, fun it, is it weird knowing that literally the president of the United States is going to hear your joke?
Yeah. It's such a weird Boyd Vico and Brad Stevens, who are EPing and head writing on the Joel show, were originally soup guys, and then they left the soup and they wound up head writing and running a couple other things for us. They're back with us on this, but they've already stayed very close with Joel especially. And they're brilliant, and it was the three of us who put the speech together. Mm-hmm. and so we went with Joel to the dinner, and that was one of the most bizarre nights of my life in a great I think, like, the weirdest thing. Since I'm from Minnesota, I'm a huge Vikings fan.
Yeah.
And it's like, for some reason, it's all of Hollywood and half of the NFL is there. And so I was sitting like,
it's nerd prom, but then for now, and especially when Obama was in office, when you guys did it, Obama sort of, him more than any other president, I can truly believe, opened that up to an entertainment world.
Yeah.
And now, like, a lot of entertainers, athletes, people want to be there, whereas before it was just like a who gives a shit.
And now.
yeah, right.
but it was very, so Adrian Peterson was sitting right behind me. Like, yeah, it's a very packed room, and I've got, like, these shoulders here.
And he's a large dude.
Yeah, and Boyd Vico, who's also a big NFL fan, is like, I cannot fucking believe you're not turning around and introducing yourself to Adrian Peterson.
Yeah.
And
you're
And I was like, I honestly can't think of a single thing to say to him besides, why do you continue to fumble at really crucial moments? And so I was like, he doesn't need to hear that tonight. I don't need to say that to him.
That's like Christian Laettner to you being exactly. Like, hey, man, what was up with that one joke?
Yeah. It was just like, I went through the night without saying a word to Adrian Good Peterson. Move. But yeah, but it was.
But also maybe he would have, who knows? Like maybe he would have laughed it off, like knowing you would have spun it into something funny, or maybe you would have gotten really pissed.
Or maybe he hears that from so many drunken fans that it spins him into a rage. Yeah. I mean, but Adrian Peterson doesn't have any anger problems. He's never had anything come out in the news where he was angry.
Jesus.
Did he?
Yeah. No.
How dare you?
How dare I? How dare he?
Quick, make a joke about
what?
Know, who's your Elway?
Yeah, he's my guy.
Yeah, has he done something wrong?
Elway doesn't do anything wrong.
Yeah,
Elway held out on so that he didn't have to play in San Diego. That's what Elway did when he got drafted.
Not Elway, Baltimore.
Baltimore, that's right. Yeah, it was
Eli Manning
didn't
want to
play in San Diego. Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure he's loving Giant Stadium this winter.
But when you're putting that together, is it a different style of writing because you're like, oh man, this is going to be journalists and politicians, or is it like? Or is it just no? We're gonna do our thing.
We kind of know we're gonna do our thing. Like Joel did some really smart stuff. Like he talked to Colbert, he talked to Kimmel, he talked to Seth Meyers. Yeah. He asked a lot of questions about what they liked about what they did, what they wish they'd have done differently, all that kind of stuff.
Did Seth Meyers mention launching Trump into the presidency? Oh no, that happened.
I think we sort of all collectively there. Conan did a really great one, and they had all done their own version of something great. With it, you know, Colbert's wasn't warmly received, but it was brilliant, and Seth's was probably the most like of all of them, but Joel kind of went in and very smartly, I think, like his sort of directive to us was, I want to cut a wide path. I don't want to do. You know, any one long run about anyone. We wound up doing a long run about Chris Christie, which was like a 4-joke deep run, but the rest of it was one and then moving to the next person. He said, I really want to be equal opportunity. Like, I don't want, after this is over with, I don't want them saying that I'm just a bleeding heart liberal who is screaming about, the Republicans.
Sure.
So we opened with our first shot was at Obama. Mm-hmm. Which was as always, Mr. President, you are amazing. You're just so funny. My favorite one you ever told was when you said you were going to close the detention facility at Guantanamo Bay, and the room got quiet. And then Michelle Obama goes, and then everybody broke up a little bit.
C-SPAN is like one of those paranormal activity movies. It's just grainy shots of empty rooms interrupted by images of people you're pretty sure died a few years ago.
Perfect joke. Right. Yeah. This is the beginning.
Yeah, that was a Brad Stevens special, I believe. Yeah. I think it was either Brad or Boy.
But, but to do something like that, and I've heard this from someone else who did the Correspondents' Dinner, it's always you have to wait for sort of the president to get it, or in this case, Michelle.
Yeah. Yeah, he definitely gives you. So we met him right before it starts. You go down to this little meet and greet thing, and it's a tiny room. And Joel was up at the head of the line, and Brad and Boyd and I, the writers, are all the way in the back. Yeah. And so we see Joel talking to Obama, and he's like pointing at us a little bit. And so we get up to the front, and Obama goes, "So you guys are Joel's writers, right?" And And he goes,
"KP, catastrophic penis, is that you?"
Yeah, and he goes, "Which one of you writes on the soup?" And I was like, "That's me." His friend goes, "Oh, Michelle loves the soup. You should go talk to her." And so
awesome.
I slid down, and he goes, "Michelle, this is KP. He wrote on the soup. Or he writes the soup." And she goes, "Oh, we love the girls, and I've been watching it forever." And I said, "It's so nice to hear, Mrs. Obama. I do have to say that when you came a few months ago to the E building to be interviewed by Ryan Seacrest," and she goes, "Yeah, I remember that." I go, "Yeah, I had to park somewhere else that day." And he overhears it. He's talking to Boyd and Brandon. He overhears and he laughs and he goes, "Yeah, that's kind of the pain in the ass of us. We move in wherever we go." And I look at him, I go, "It's second term arrogance, Mr. President, and I'm not fond." And he pats me on the shoulder. He goes, "All right, you said the thing you thought of in the shower. Let's take a picture." And we take a picture. I was like, this fucking guy is good.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
His timing, dude.
Oh, it was amazing.
Yeah. Dude, there you go. That's that's a moment that you will never forget. And good for you for not fanboying out, but just being lost up in these meeting the president.
Yeah.
Wait, now, did he have his Obama cadence? Like, "Well, that was the thing you said in the shower." Or was he more conversational at that point?
A little more conversational. Yeah. But that's the crazy thing about him, which really fascinated me, was like, I was nervous right up to the minute I was talking to him, and then all of a sudden I'm not. And I think that that's something that, like, great leaders have is this ability, like knowing full well you're the president of the United States, right. Every person who talks to you is going to be intimidated by you by virtue of that single fact.
Yeah. Yeah.
So somehow you have to project something that gets them to say something to you. And mm-hmm. and like somehow there is that like moment of just like, oh yeah, I'm just talking to this guy. And like I said, I still get fucking nervous talking to Patton Oswalt, who I've known for 20 years,
yeah.
because I think
mm-hmm.
he's a genius.
Yeah.
And I just go, holy shit, I could never think of the things he thinks of.
Well, because also like, he's somehow, a version of a dwarf, and dwarfs yeah. are very intimidating
yeah,
and talented.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm scared shitless. Like I, between you being here and rain today, I really wasn't thinking of coming.
You made the rain.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, we had that power.
There is something, too, about like Obama probably... recognizes that people are nervous around him, right?
Yeah.
And so he probably goes out of his way to make them comfortable
yeah.
by making jokes. But also, I don't know, maybe he, him being that comfortable around you to make that joke, maybe he, you know, genuinely does like feel at home around comedians or people that are not.
I think there's
so
something to that.
All the time.
I think there's something to the idea that like he's kind of just a laid back cat at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And so he just you know, he projects that when he needs to, but he probably also is pretty good at projecting, hey, I can have you fucking yeah. killed by an airstrike.
Yeah. Like I can do it. And so you didn't see a person like come up to him and whisper like, this K.P. Anderson, he writes on
nope.
the soup.
Nope, there's none of that. It was just, okay. And but it was really weird. It was a really, like, Eric Stone Street, who lives around the corner from me, mm-hmm. Was right in front of me in line. And so he was giving me shit the entire time we were walking up, too. Like, there was so much bizarre shit going on in that room. Like, when someone's introducing you to Wolf Blitzer, and someone introduced me to Wolf Blitzer.
Yeah. And?
And I stay on my hand, and he goes, call me Wolf. And I literally think to myself.
That's a weird thing to say.
I literally
think
to myself, what the fuck else am I going to call you? But yeah, I just go, hi, nice to meet you. And then Joel walks up, and I go, Joel, this is Wolf Blitzer. And he goes, call me Wolf. And Joel goes, what the fuck else was I going to call you?
Did you ask him how you can get into the Situation Room?
I did not.
Yeah.
See, that's where I would have fucked up.
Yeah.
And then you'd probably been like, oh, I've heard that before.
Yep.
Fuck off, Jew. And you're like, all right, that's a little
Did you ask him
far.
How it felt to lose to Andy Richter on Celebrity Jeopardy by such a large margin?
I did not. Did he really?
He got destroyed.
Really?
Wolf Blitzer was on Celebrity Jeopardy?
Yes, and got destroyed by Andy Richter.
Dude, Blitzer versus Trebek in anything yeah. I want to see.
Yeah.
I think he's got the weirdest kind of Asperger's, Wolf Blitzer.
Yeah.
There's something bizarre
up,
about that guy.
Because he's also, he's always just so mildly jacked up
yeah.
for traumatic events.
Well, I mean, yeah. music.
Yeah.
The music, the graphics, yeah, but he yeah. is like, I don't know, I mean.
He's the perfectly conditioned CNN guy.
But then, you know what's so funny? I went to one, I think it was one award show party, this was like 3-4 years ago, and I remember seeing him with a drink in his hand, and then I remember literally 10 minutes later turning around and seeing him walk over this drink to go get another drink. And I was like, yeah. maybe that guy parties. Maybe that's
maybe
how he softens the burgers.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Might be. I don't know. I really can't stand CNN.
Yeah.
It drives me nuts that Trump hates CNN because I hate CNN for completely other reasons. But I feel like if I say I hate CNN, everybody goes,
think,
oh, you're
like,
fucking
oh,
fake
yeah.
news. But I don't
yeah.
think CNN... For years now, I think that their MO is to, like, pre-Trump, when we had other problems,
sure.
CNN's MO was to basically wait for a cop to shoot a kid someplace. And then they would go to that town and they would talk to the most extreme people on either side of the thing until they had baited a riot. And then CNN would have a weekend of ratings. Like, that's how I feel
Holy
about their
shit.
Coverage of shit. That
uh-huh.
they're a news organization. How come there's never a journalistic expose in CNN to how a Ferguson, Missouri exists? It's very simple. It's corruption and mismanagement. That's the only way that cities get down to a level of something like that. And corruption and mismanagement happen on all sides of a political aisle. It's just people getting power and then abusing the said power. That's it. But they can't do that simple thing. Instead, they wait for the worst fucking thing to happen and then scare the shit out of everybody until an even worse thing can happen.
Wow.
And that's
that may have been the smartest rant ever
yeah.
on this podcast.
Yeah, it's not really funny, but it pisses me off.
I just want you to know that. Like our fans are waiting for us to make a slip and slide joke right now.
Okay, let's do that then.
No, you're sadly, I mean, very accurate with that assessment.
Yeah. So I just, so like my lack of trust in CNN is, mm-hmm. and by the way, my wife is like the special prosecutor that Robert Mueller doesn't know that he's hired. Like she is locked to MSNBC all night, every night watching.
Oh, okay. I thought like in actuality.
No. She'll just like when he slips up, she'll catch it and she'll fucking send that email. But it's like, so I'm a little like, I'm a little news coveraged out of this stuff to a certain degree. But I honestly do. I look at CNN and I go, your motivations are so purely not journalistic.
Now, how do you navigate being a father through times like these? And how does being a father help your comedy? And also, how does the world right now help your fathering?
Let's see. So being a father, let me get to that later. The being a stand-up or being a father in times like these, it helps that my kid, like, has always been, and this is my wife's, to her credit, she never really talked to my daughter in baby talk. I did, and you know, not anymore, because she'd fucking beat the shit out of me. But she always sort of like when my kid was 2 years old and moving towards a light socket, you know, Leslie would just be like, "Hey, don't touch that," and that would be enough. Like instead of no, we don't, you know, like, which I'm not saying that's wrong.
Everybody's, see, I still need that type of talk for me to not put my finger in a light switch.
I know, I've been in a room with you. But
why do you think my hair gets so poofy?
Yeah. but like I think that like it helps to have the right kid for you is the biggest thing. But it's it's just speaking practically about stuff. Like last night, out of the blue, my daughter wanted to talk about legalized weed. And
for the first time?
Yeah. And honestly, 14? She's such a picky eater that I swear to God, like 6 years ago, she asked me about pot and I went, "This is all you need to know about drugs. Drugs are spicy." And I think that bought me like 5 years without having to say a fucking thing about it.
See, that's what you got to do as a parent. Just go, oh, heroin? It tastes like Brussels sprouts.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, lima beans? That's crack.
Yeah, but now 14, and she knows me fairly well. Like, there's no point in acting like marijuana hasn't been near me in the last, I don't know, 7 days. Yeah. I did say, like, I was able to go. The one thing that I found interesting was she's very anti-pot. Like, that she goes, she's done research where she said that if people do it before they're 25, it can really, you know, affect their brain and affect their cognitive skills and stuff. And so I was like, like, when she told me that, I was like, right?
Is this why I'm always wearing different color socks?
I mean, throw a ball to Adam right now. He will not catch it.
Yeah. He will run from it.
Yeah.
How dare you bring that up?
But so we had the conversation, and it was kind of a cool conversation where I was like, listen, you know, I said, as like someone who believes in personal liberties, there's a lot of things that could hurt you that are legal. I don't understand why pot wouldn't be legal too.
Sure.
And I said, if it was taxed and regulated and it wasn't an all cash business and the federal government got out everybody's ass about it, it would be a huge boon to our economy, and it would solve a lot of the issues that we have with crime and with smuggling, with these immigration things that everybody's talking about. So in my mind, it should be legal. I said, but that said, is, you know, I think that ultimately becomes every family's responsibility to know what their kids are doing and know that there's not a time for that. And like, if you came to me now and said, "Dad, I want to try pot," I would go, "Not in my house, you're not." You know, and no joke about it. I literally would just be like, "No, it's not the time for it." But she's cool. Like, that's how I handle being a father in times like this.
Yeah.
She wants to talk about stuff. We try not to, you know, like, even though we want her to kind of share our feelings on politics and stuff like that, we try not to over indoctrinate her into like our particular, like, every kid should get an opportunity to kind of feel the world out for themselves.
It's such a fine balance, I feel like, for a parent to not download all of their thoughts and opinions onto their pristine little minds. You know, like, let them kind of, you know, you want to shape, obviously, some things, because there's so much coming at them now that, like, they can over influenced by something.
Yeah. Sure.
So.
And on the big things, you'd be like, yeah, murder, bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't do that.
Exactly, yeah.
But if she has a different stance on prescription drugs than you do, it's like, okay.
If you've got some sort of an opinion you'd like to state on a single-payer healthcare system, knock yourself out.
Yeah. Well, actually, here's my thoughts on the debt ceiling.
I got the kid that fucking would, too. Like, God damn it. Oh, now I got to listen to you talk about this.
There's also certain situations you don't need to present yet. Like your swinger story. You wouldn't tell her that just to be like, now be aware because this might happen, right? Because
yeah.
that's like...
Yeah, there's no...
Yeah.
That's always weird. She did come down and see me at Nerd Melt a couple months ago and I didn't hold back. And I was just like, oh, whatever. She kind of knows.
Some of you at some point want your kid to know how... Like that you can do that great. Like, yeah. be like, I want you to see me in my element, right?
Yeah. Well, and we're like, well, here's a perfect example. So she decided for her Latin final this year, they had to do a multimedia.
They still teach Latin?
Yeah.
Well, okay.
Which I pay for that too. and they had to do some kind of multimedia thing, and she decided of her own volition that she wanted to shoot herself in front of a green screen. I said of her own volition, like
wow.
I did not. Being the warm-up act for the gladiators at the Colosseum. And so she wrote jokes in English that then she translated to Latin.
That's fucking hilarious.
And told them in Latin and intentionally bombed. So it was pretty fucking
wow.
brilliant all the way through.
Well, yeah.
And by the way,
if you're trying to bomb.
Wrote one of the most perfect jokes I've ever heard. Like Carl Reiner, Mel Brooks type of shit. The
Man.
Joke was, I just got back from Pompeii. The show was okay. Nobody laughed, but nobody left.
Oh my god! Because
okay. they were
yeah.
stone.
Yeah,
yeah, yes. Pompeii.
So I was like,
Pompeii.
Yeah, yes. I was like,
okay.
holy
Sorry.
Shit!
I was like, wait,
was
Pompeii.
Like, yeah.
Why is that part of the joke?
No, but she was like, I need like 3-4 jokes. Can you send? She texts me while she's at school, and
yeah.
she's like, I need
That's
3-4
awesome,
jokes.
Right?
Can you text me something? And so I texted her a couple, and then I texted her, I just got back from Caligula's place, and boy, is my asshole tired. I just got back. You're fired.
Hey, that's great though.
Yeah.
You guys have that, but. Then how great is it that she knows that that's something that she could use you as a resource for? It's like,
yeah.
oh, I can do this, and my dad yeah. is a fantastic comedy
yeah.
writer.
Yeah.
So
and how great is it that I know the dirty joke that gets me out of having to do it?
Well, so the show, the premiere date?
February 18th, I think, between 17th and 18th, whatever that Saturday, Sunday of that week is.
That's a great time, I feel like, to come on.
Yeah, we're going to go a week earlier, but that's the opening ceremony of the Olympics.
Best to probably avoid that time slot, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And then...
Nothing Trump's figure skating.
No, two-man luge.
Yeah.
that's what I want to see you guys do.
I mean...
Holy shit.
Yeah. I mean, the two-man luge is what some people allege we already do.
Yeah.
Because I hang out here so much.
Yeah, yeah,
when
everyone,
someone calls me, it's like, hey, do you want to go? Like, I got to hang out with Adam.
Yep.
And they're like, oh, so you guys are two-man luge again
tonight?
Yeah.
I mean,
exactly what we're doing.
Yeah, from an aesthetic standpoint, Summer Olympics shot put. I get how that works, but
two-man
luge. Yeah.
Well, you just have one dwarf and one lanky guy.
Yeah, there you go.
And that's how it works. And for those, I don't know how you would have never seen the Soup or know the format, because so many shows have tried to do essentially the Soup's format.
Yeah, and I think that we, you know, we were doing Talk Soup's format, and they were doing, you know, people always used to be like, aren't you pissed about Tosh? And I was like, I didn't create. The like talking about shit that happened thing.
Yeah.
It's,
that wasn't me.
No, it's fine.
Yeah, so yeah.
Yeah. And but you guys are the best at this.
This is
what you do. So this is why
Thanks,
people should absolutely watch this show. I mean, you've won Emmys from it.
We have not won. We got nominated.
Okay.
We never won one.
Oh,
yeah.
Geez, Brad.
It's a tough category,
but you,
man.
But,
John Oliver.
But,
shit.
Is yeah, that, but you
oh,
have
wow.
an Emmy though.
Yeah. I do have one. Yeah. That was the Wayne Brady show.
Nice. Okay.
Yep.
Where do you keep your Emmy?
It is in my office. That Emmy, I had been, as we spoke about earlier, I had been invited to not be there any longer when we won that Emmy. So the good folks at Buena Vista Television, a division of Walt Disney, sent me my Emmy regular postage. Like, literally
wow.
dropped off on the doorstep with stamps licked to the fucking thing.
like someone could, like the same way people grab Amazon packages now, someone could just be like, hey, there's a package.
Yep.
An Emmy?
You got a fucking Emmy. Holy
like,
shit.
Holy shit, I want an Emmy.
Yeah.
Oh, it's
a daytime son of a bitch.
That's Phil Simpson's joke.
Yeah. Oh, it's a Grammy.
Yeah. Fucking
that's
perfect.
Amazing. Well, hopefully, and I see no reason why not. This is not going to crush.
I hope so. We're really excited about it. Joel seems very like in the mode that he needs to be in.
When he was talking about it, and I feel like you need that like jacked up attitude for something like this. And with you guys and adding Paul in the mix, like, and it's like in the time we're living in, like, people want to see stuff, especially now, you know, opening up to global, like being chopped down like that, you know, and made light of.
And honestly, I can't, like, from a writing standpoint, the stuff that we're talking about doing, I can't speak highly enough of Brad Stevens, Boyd Vico, okay. some of the writers that are going to be coming in to join us, Dominic. It's going to be it, and then we've got some new people that are just incredible. It's going to be. You know, a really, really, really solid. Since we haven't shot the first one yet,
yeah.
Who knows? Maybe we suck, but but I think it's going to be. We're putting our best foot forward to make something that's going to be really fun and really
and having people come
just
through.
Enough the same and just enough different. Yeah. Hopefully, yeah.
And same way with people coming through and guests. Yeah, you know.
But now we've got Paul Feig, so I'd expect that level to rise.
Fuck yeah, dude! Yeah.
If you need a guest host, Jay Moore, man, he's absolutely
you know,
fantastic.
JJ was the only person to ever guest host for Joel.
Really?
My first week when I took over as
like
showrunner, which was about like 5 weeks into the show, Joel's son needed to have surgery and he could not make the taping. Uh-huh. And we were like, oh shit, what do we do? And I was like, well, I'll call Jay Moore. And everyone, well, fucking call him. And so I called and he was like, yeah. So he did, at the time, his son Jackson was young. Jay was like, I got Jackson, so I'm bringing him with me. And I was like, okay, fine. So he stood and did it. And Jackson was so short that you couldn't see him on camera, but he was just running circles around Jay the whole time. And every once in a while, Jay would tell a joke that would kill him. He'd just put his hand up and Jackson would run by it and give him a high five.
That's fantastic. But, I'm short enough to be below the camera.
There you go.
So
we're going
to
have you running around.
To run around Joel and just give him a high five every now and then, I could totally do it.
Wait, Brad Williams, put it up there.
Brad, as Barry, will you give him some encouraging advice about the Joe McHale show with Joe McHale?
And then I'm going to talk dirty to you as Barry on the way out.
Listen, man, it's a show that changed television. You can look and see all the parodies of what you guys did, because what you guys did was brilliant in so many ways. And that's what you're going to bring back to the people, is something that you can do best. Everyone tried to do Tim Hardaway's killer crossover. But only Tim Hardaway could do the killer crossover, man. And that's what people are looking for you to do. This show is going to be great. It's going to be undeniable. People are going to watch it. And Tosh is immediately going to want to be on it.
That is so nice of you to say, pal. I am going to fuck your face so hard, buddy.
Good night, everybody.
All right, thank you, guys.
Thanks, buddy.
So, that's the show.
Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast with Brad Williams and Adam Ray. Boy, they're a lot of fun, huh? Why don't you subscribe on iTunes to this fucking podcast? Give them a 5-star rating so this midget and this Jew can feel good about themselves for a couple minutes. Also, get on your iPhone or Android and get the podcast app. You can also listen to it on Stitcher or aboutlastnightpodcast.com, where you can hear past episodes with great guests like Lisa Kudrow, Paul Feig, Kevin Nealon, Bob Saget, Dion Cole, Chris D'Elia, Adam Devine, Michael McDonald, Jaleel White, Bud Friedman, Steve-O, Harlan Williams, Tom Arnold, Ron Funches, Rick Glassman, Blake Anderson, Anders Holm, Jessamay Peluso, Joey McIntyre, and many, many more. I'm Tony Danza. Thanks for listening to the About Last Night podcast. Good night. That's it, right? You got it? Sweet. Boy, it smells good in that booth, by the way. What kind of candle is that? Hanukkah Willow? Nice.
Seeking the truth never gets old. Introducing June's Journey, the free-to-play mobile game that will immerse you in a thrilling murder mystery. Join June Parker as she uncovers hidden objects and clues to solve her sister's death in a beautifully illustrated world set in the roaring 20s. With new chapters added every week, the excitement never ends. Download June's Journey now on your Android or iOS device, or play on PC through Facebook Games.